Well, I guess I'd like to thank the organizers again for the opportunity to speak at this conference. In fact, with this constant rotation of participants, every day feels like a new conference. So, maybe so it's all for the better, I guess, that I prepared two pretty much independent talks. And thank you for skating to this talk this morning. And so I guess I'll begin by reviewing what is quantum cohomology and what's Hilbert scheme. So what's Hilbert scheme of points in C2? It's a very simple object. So can everybody see green here? There's, you know. Yeah, I tried my best with adjusting control of this projector. So, but anyway, there are parts of this text written in green. So I can read them if you can read them. So anyway, this the Hilbert scheme of n points in C2 is by definition set of all ideals in the ring of polynomials in two variables such that the codimension of this ideal, just as a linear space, is n. And so principal example of this is if I pick n distinct point in C2 and I look at all the polynomials that vanish at this n point, then this is obviously an ideal. And moreover, its codimension, since the quotient by its ideal are functions on this n point, is always a codimension n. So it's a main example. This is why it's called the Hilbert scheme of n points. And it has, so the first fact about this this object is that it's a same morphography, that's a smooth, irreducible. It's quasi-projective because C2 is quasi-projective. And it has complex dimension 2n. So in particular, since I've described for you an obviously irreducible locus of dimension 2n, that has to be a dense open set in the Hilbert scheme. Right, an open dense set is formed by the example we've just seen on the previous transparency of n distinct points. And the complement of that is a divisor in the Hilbert scheme. And in fact, this is where two points come together. So we'll denote this this boundary by this partial symbol. And so it's a divisor. And in fact, it's better to look at minus one half of that divisor, because it's this guy is the positive generator of the Picard group. So the Picard group of this is just Z. It's the same as H2. And this is the positive generator. And it is, this divisor is the hyperplane section of the Plucker embedding. In other words, saying there's a bundle over the Hilbert scheme, which is formed, tautological bundle, which is they take a fiber of a point I, this n-dimensional quotient of all polynomials modulo the ideal I. So it's a vector bundle of rank n. The first Chern class of that is this divisor. So in particular, when we've been talking about curves in the Hilbert scheme, we will measure their degree. Degree of a curve is how many times it intersects this divisor. Or in Plucker embedding, then there will be the usual degree of the curve in projective space. So that's the Hilbert scheme part. So now we'll talk about quantum cohomology. I will not review what's cohomology and how you multiply in cohomology, but maybe it's the quantum cohomology is somewhat, maybe just marginal less standard object. So let's quickly review it. So I apologize for those who've not only seen this object but in fact invented it. So. Or written books about it. So, so if I have three classes in the cohomology of some projective algebraic variety X, I can there's this new quantum product, which the matrix elements of this quantum product are the numbers of. So you want to count the number of degree d rational curves meeting the Poincaré dual cycles. Of course, this counting has to be taken in virtual sense. But we'll skip over that. And the magic elements are taken with respect to the standard inner product in the cohomology, that's the Poincaré dual, and there's the new parameter is responsible for the fact that we count rational curves of all possible degrees. Here's a, in general, for general x, this degree is a vector, but for Hilbertian degree is just a number because H2 is just one dimensional. So we sum over all possible degree with the weight q to the d, where q is the new variable, the new parameter, the deformation parameter. And if I set q equals 0, that recovers the classical multiplication. This is because, well, if I have a, if I curve for degree 0, it's just means point. And so in that case, I'm counting triple intersection, which is what classical cohomology does. So the picture, that's the, so to speak, the picture you should imagine. So that's there are three cycles in the Hilbert scheme, and one is interested in rational curves that pass through all three of them. So now it's both the study of the Hilbert scheme and the study of quantum cohomology somehow is a both are very well-studied objects in mathematics, and so quantum cohomology has been, I guess I won't review either because it's will take me the end of the lecture. But just saying that there's a tremendous body of work in quantum cohomology, tremendous body of work on Hilbert scheme of points, and it's only natural to study this question. And but in fact, we're interested. So it's a very natural question, but we have our separate motivation to study it, and it is because, as I'll explain in a minute, it's related. The quantum cohomology of the Hilbert scheme is related So quantum cohomology is about genus zero curves, if you're interested in higher genus Gromov-Witten invariants, then and you look at threefold. So this is something we'd like to do in our free time or during working hours, is to study the higher genus Gromov variants of threefold, and in particular, if you take the threefold of the form curve cross surface, such as the simplest example would be P1 cross C2, then you see that you realize that it's related to a genus zero questions about the Hilbert scheme, and it's sort of very, by waving one's hands, it's very easy to explain this, namely. What's a curve what's some kind of higher genus curve in curve cross surface? Well, on Monday I've been advocating the fact that there are at least two points of view on this object. Well, in fact, there's a third, and an hour from now Jim will tell you the fourth, and So the three points of view on this object is you take the first one, if you think of curve as a parameterized curve, that is to say a map from an abstract curve to X, or you can look at the curve as an object defined by equation in threefold, that is an ideal sheaf on the whole threefold, or you can slice your, if you realize that your three, so to speak, take the, it's a kind of Hamiltonian point of view, that you think of your threefold as actually something one-dimensional across two-dimensional, and consider slicing your threefold in the surfaces, and you realize that you have a one-dimensional family of sub-schemes of a surface. That is to say, a map from the base curve to the Hilbert scheme of the fiber surface. I guess it's a it's known under the name of holography or something like this, right? And so the first two are related to this Gromov-Witten equals the Downs and Thomas conjecture, that I was talking about Monday, and in very very special case of that, it's now proven, and you'll hear more about the case, the Gromm-Witten case, the Gromm-Witten story in Jim's talk, I'm sure, and there's a and then the fourth point of view will also come up, and but then the third is, so to speak, between the two. This, if you think it's some kind of marriage between the Gromm-Witten theory, well, I don't know if it's a marriage or some kind of joint venture between the Gromm-Witten theory and the Donaldson Thomas theory. So this is. So this is why we're, you know, this is one reason why we're interested in this, and well, this will turn out for things like, you know, rank two bundle over curve, that actually all three are equivalent. So I'll now give you a review of. Since quantum cohomology is a deformation of ordinary classical cohomology, as I said, there's a tremendous body of work on this subject, and I'll review what's known. And I mean, this list is by no means complete. There's this. In fact, we'll need the equivariant cohomology, and so there is the most natural action of the two-dimensional torus on the plane by just scaling the coordinate, and that of course induces an action of the Hilbert scheme just again by scaling the variables, and that makes the Gregorian cohomology a module over the ring of polynomials. I'll take it with rational coefficients over the polynomial rings in two variables. The T1 and T2 are the weights of the torus. And in fact, it's a free module. And for example, if I want to exhibit a basis, but for example, I can take this Nakajima basis. That is the following. If I take, say, take a partition of n, and then like we discussed, the general element of the Hilbert scheme is n distinct points in C2, but I consider a situation when this sum of these points came together, and so they grouped together at the same point, and so some points occur with multiplicity. And so this partition will dictate multiplicity. In other words, I look at the locus of ideals supported at a number of some number of distinct points, namely as many numbers as I have parts in my partition, and the multiplicity with which these points occur are mu1, mu2, etc. Now then, this is the closure of that is a cycle, and its Poincaré dual is an element in cohomology. Since this has been, of course, defined, this is obviously a T-fixed locus, and it's an element in equivariant cohomology. And so then, this normalization factor is convenient. So anyway, given a partition of n, there is an element in cohomology. It's just, and this is a basis. In fact, a free basis over that Q. With Q coefficients, it's a free basis of over T1, the current cohomology. And for example, if my partition is 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, which is shorthand for this is 1 to the n, then I'm talking about n distinct points. The closure of that is the whole Hilbert scheme, and the Poincaré dual of that is the identity element. And 2 and the rest is 1 is when the two points came together. That's our, that's up to, and due to this factor, there'll be factor 1/2 here, and we have this minus at the very first transparency, so it'll be minus this element is minus the generator of the Picard group. Another useful basis is formed by the torus fixed points in the Hilbert scheme. It's a The Torus 6 points are also, so this was indexed by partitions of n. The Torus 6 points are also indexed by partitions of n. And what's a Torus 6 point? Well, the monomials are, the monomials, there's a table of my favorite monomials, and all of these are eigenfunctions of the Torus section with distinct eigenvalue, and therefore any T-fixed subspace is spanned by those, and in order to be an ideal, it has to be it has to look like this. So, meaning there has to be this kind of staircase shape, and whatever is outside of the staircase shape is in the ideal, and what's inside is not. And the corners are the generators, and the number of boxes not in the ideal, that is to say, the codimension of this ideal, is n. Well, such an object is, of course, just a well-known graphical representation of a partition. It's a diagram of a partition. If you just list the length of the rows, that will give a partition of n. So here's the first row has 5 elements, and 4, 2, and 1, and so that's partition 5, 4, 2, 1. As you see, it looks sort of, that makes sense, because they have given you at least the sum of beta numbers works out correctly. So the Torus 6 is a very important feature of the Hilbert scheme. It's again, it's well known that the Torus 6 point is isolated, and well, by localization they form a basis once I pass the field of fraction, and obviously multiplication in this basis is sort of trivial, right? Because if I multiply two Torus 6 points, it's they're essentially idempotent up to normalization, up to the weight of the normal. Or up to the weight of the tangent weights, they're idempotent. So a conclusion from that: if we have an idempotent basis of a ring, this idempotence are certainly are eigenfunction of multiplication by any element of the cohomology whatsoever, right? For obvious reasons. So in particular, we'll be interested in multiplication not by any, but by specific element, namely by the divisor. So as it turns out, in this fixed point basis, it's like I said, multiplication the fixed point basis is essentially trivial. However, multiplication the Nakajima basis is not. And a very beautiful fact which I'll review presently is that it turns out that the classical multiplication by this divisor is nothing but the quantum collodura. It can be naturally identified with the quantum collodura operator. And let's review how this works. What's the quantum collodura operator? So the quantum collodura is the following differential operator. It describes n identical quantum particles that live on a circle of the circumference 1. And so that's the kinetic part. And if you go to, this is minus the normal Laplacian, so it has the right sign. And the potential part is they interact via this inverse square potential. Or if you write it in usual coordinates on the circle, that'll be inverse sine square potential, but let's keep it like this. And in front of that, there's a coupling constant, which for historical reasons people like write like this. And maybe not so historical as the following thing, that this the ground state of this Hamiltonian is this van der Monde to the power, this van der Monde determined to the power theta. So which you can check by just some elementary exercise to check, and then what's convenient. So in particular, this these identical quantum particles are neither bosons nor fermions. They have some kind of generalized statistics that depends on this number theta. But if I undo this by conjugating my Hamiltonian what I do is I take first multiplication by this by the ground state function, then the action of the operator, then divide. So that is to say, I conjugate the operator by the operator of multiplication by this ground state function. Then again, it's you can check by it's an elementary thing to check that this no that that thing A. So this is two aspects of this. That first of all, it now preserves symmetric, this ground state is neither symmetric nor isosymmetric and somehow more general. But now this preserves the space of symmetric expressions in Z1 and Zn, and moreover, it preserves polynomials. So if I have a polynomial, I was saying this is the excitation over this ground state have the form of this ground state times the symmetric polynomial in Zi. So this number of these variables is entirely irrelevant. So what the symbol means, it means symmetric polynomials in the variables Z1 through Zn. And the number of variables here is irrelevant, and it's convenient to view it as a formally infinite. There's this... yeah, sure.
The coupling constant, so theta times theta minus 1 is a double value.
Yes.
So there seems to be two
grounds. Right. Yeah. Well, I agree. But one of them is not. If you get a negative thing, then it will not be, of course, square integrable. So. So what we did is after conjugating by this wave function, what we've done is we've reduced to the Hilbert space in which this operator operates to symmetric polynomials in the variables in this auxiliary variable Zi's. And now we will so at least we now have an operator. And now we will identify the direct sum of the cohomology ring of the Hilbert scheme with symmetric polynomials with the same object. So we have an operator in symmetric polynomials. Now we'll identify the direct sum of the cohomology ring with the same object by the following procedure. One takes this Nakajimi basis, the one that quickly review. So this was the basis. So it's a particular particular nice basis of the cohomology, and what we will do to it, we will send it to properly normalized power sum symmetric function. What's a power sum symmetric function is the following: is pk is the sum of all variables to the power k, and then we have a partition. Then we just multiply this function over the parts of the partition. So now in this space, we have two operators. We have the Clausius operator, and we have the multiplication by divisor operates here by multiplication, and it's a fact. I actually don't know who noticed it first, but anyway, so it's a fact that you can, that the multiplication by this is the Clausius operator. Moreover, so there's more to the story. Since we know that the multiplication by the Torres fixed points being the eigenvectors of multiplication by anything whatsoever, therefore they have to go to the eigenfunctions of the Clausius operator. These are known by Jack polynomials. So Jack's works preceded actually Clausius works by a year or two. And so anyway, this is our polynomials that have been around for a while. And so in fact, there's a particular normalization, the so-called integral form of Jack polynomials that these fixed points go to. But then furthermore, the Clauger operator, I mean, F means Sutherland, right? So the Clauger's original model was on the line, and it's the on the circle. That's it's called Clauger-Sutherland. So this is it has a coupling constant, the parameter. Well, there is a parameter here. It's in fact, in the Korean cohomology, you have two parameters, T1 and T2. But because it's the whole theory is graded, it's only the ratio that matters, and that's the this particular combination minus the ratio is theta. And in fact, there is on this side, exchanging T1 and T2 is a trivial symmetry, and here that corresponds to sending theta to 1 over theta, which is well known but somewhat mysterious duality. And then, as emphasized, for example, in the paper by Stell and Granovsky, it's a much more general situation than we naturally have the commuting Hamiltonians, then this, you know, the system is exactly solvable in every sense of the word, meaning it has, in particular, it has a full set of commuting Hamiltonians, and this corresponds, of course, to multiplication by other elements of the cohomology ring. Right, since this is a commutative ring, right, so this is multiplication by anything commutes, and this corresponds to commuting operators with this guy. So, well, I think it's a very beautiful and very satisfactory picture, and so the natural question is, what about the quantum multiplication? No, divisor doesn't generate classical cohomology. It generates the quantum. We'll get to that, but the classical it doesn't. It's the same just for Sigurd-Mannian, right? I mean, the divisor doesn't generate the. So what about the quantum multiplication? Well, anytime you see Jack polynomials n letter q, your guess should be that this would be MacDonald polynomials. And in fact, that's what I thought for years, but couldn't prove. And it turns out that probably it's not right. So at least what the answer I'll give you, certainly on the face of it, has nothing to do with MacDonald polynomials, an object of completely different nature, and it's related to some so to speak non-stationary integrable system, except there is no definition of a non-stationary integrable system, and well, we'll get to that. I want to say that it so to speak, it's not so. Maybe it's not so surprising to find some kind of integrable structure in the quantum cohomology of a nice variety. For example, look at the Sasha's work on the flag manifold, but anyway, so it seems to be a new integrable system, which is like I said, a non-stationary deformation of the Clauger operator. And I'll just begin by just stating the answer. So it's not as complicated as it looks. So after digestion, we'll be pretty comfortable with this operator. So that's the first main theorem, that the operator of there's explicit formula of operator of quantum multiplication by the divisor, and it's in terms of the following standard. Just you see that there's the symmetric polynomials are generated. In fact, it's a free commutative algebra generated by this power sum symmetric functions. So there's a natural operations on this, namely multiplication by the generator and the corresponding partial derivative. Now, to distinguish the multiplication operator from the symmetric function itself, I've introduced here a notation which is sort of creation annihilation operator notation. This is merely to distinguish the multiplication operator from the function itself. So there's an operator of multiplication by the power sum, maybe I'll write, in power sum symmetric function is this pk summation zi to the k. So on symmetric polynomials, this is an operator like this, and then the corresponding partial derivative. K is here just for historical reasons, so to speak. You see, only this part here. No, this part is just a scalar operator. It's not very interesting. So this is in green so that you can see it. I mean, you know, this way you're not don't pay any attention to this part here. It's just a scalar operator. Now, the q-dependent part is only here. So let's focus on the q-dependent part first. And so you see what's written here is pk d by dpk. Such an operator is obviously diagonal in monomials if I look monomials into the generators, then the such operator is obviously diagonal. So all the quantum corrections are just in the diagonal part of this operator. And the rest, more complicated looking sum is just the original Clausius operator, only written in this, if I gave a Clausius operator in terms of the original it's differential operator on this on here, and then it's so to speak second quantized form. I don't know. I mean, it's written in terms of something else, right? And in fact, this, the part of that you've seen, you see it over and over again. This kind of what you call cut and join or cut and paste equations or split and join. And so, anyway, this part, what this guy does, what's there? It's something like pk pl z by dp k plus l. No, I think I'll write I'll write big enough, right? I don't need the color. It's completely invisible. That's okay. I won't. So in other words, if in the monomials in this generator, this operates diagonally. What this guy does is it splits the two. It takes one pk and splits them in part. And you can split like p5 into p2 times p3, and that does the opposite. Has the opposite effect. Take p2, p3, and make p5 out of it. So, like I said, but that splitting and joining part is just the same that was in the classical cohomology there. So it's there's nothing quantum in there. It's just the Clausius. It's the way, just the very Clausius operator. And what else?
What's the
classical
limit in this notation?
Q equals zero. Q equals zero. You get minus one from this to this object, and. And then finally, so to speak, ahead of time, you could know that this is a rational function of Q, in fact, right? So it's the way quantum multiplication is defined is a formal series in Q, and so we weren't surprised to find it, but somehow to actually prove it is another matter. Well, anyway, that's the theorem, and we'll come back to that in a second. What?
Are the next?
No, of course not. Like even the divisor thing is negative. I mean, the way I've defined it, even the divisor class is negative. So. No, but I mean it's a basis, right? I mean, no, I mean it's a What I'm saying is there are classes of the pancreas duals are some actual classes. Okay? They're not the positive. They're not positive elements of cohomology because the intersections of the defects. Yeah. So I'm not going to explain proof. And the main technical issue, I think, the main novelty here is that this old workhorse. There's like the old workhorse of localization in the Gromov-Witten theory somehow. The first attempt refuses to work, and the reason for that is that while I told you that the fixed points are isolated, the T-invariant curves are not isolated, and in fact, they're not isolated, but they form very complicated, I mean, somehow very extremely interesting loci, and you know, you can find the Grassmannian flag manifolds, you know, everything. I mean, I don't know, you can. Too bad Rod is not here, I saw. Oh, here. And maybe there's some kind of good universality. Maybe you can find everything. There's a nice, smooth... there are nice, smooth varieties with torus action. All this loci. And maybe you can find every smooth manifold with torus action in there. But anyway, they're nice, but they're... can be pretty complicated, and in fact, the only way we can integrate over them is somehow by solving backwards, by doing localization backwards. Doing localization backwards gives you a way to compute the quantum cohomology of all this sub-loci, but a priori the localization that I mean, localization leads you to some integrals that you can't really compute. I mean, you can't compute from definitions. And so we had to get around this and, you know, use some other ideas. And then, yeah, maybe not. I won't talk about it. And so one of the principal corollaries of this formula, so just by direct examination of the formula, you see that this divisor generates the quantum ring. It's by sort of eyeballing the formula, you see that this is true. And this is false for classical cohomology. So therefore, since already we've got a generator and we know how multiplication by it acts, we therefore know the entire quantum rate structure does determine. It doesn't mean that you know, if you want a quantum multiplication by any other class, you have to do some work to find out what it is. But in principle, it's a finite amount of work for any given class. Now I'm very to see Robert because his equation then determines all, since it's generated by the divisor, and it determines all genus zero things, and then with an arbitrary number of insertions, and then you can determine all higher genus Gromov-Witten invariants by they'll be pretty ineffective, but what you can do is the following. You can use localization, then you get this this localization contribution over loci that like I said, I mean, you can't integrate them over them by definition, but you can compute all these integrals by solving the genus zero data backwards. So the genus zero data contains all the information you need to use localization plus, of course, you'll need the Hodge integrals, but, you know. but in principle, you can compute. That's not very, like I said, that's a procedure that doesn't sound very effective. Maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it'll be better in Sasha's formula there's a very nice operator formula for digesting the higher genus data in terms of genus zero data, and so maybe it's maybe it will be helpful here. But like I said, I haven't computed any integral in higher genus just because it's, the amount of work is very large. So now I want to talk about this quantum differential equation, and this is quantum differential equation is this equation. This psi is unknown. I mean, it's the unknown function with values in cohomology, and you know, that's the equation it's supposed to satisfy. It's a linear differential equation, and of course, if here I drop the q-dependent terms, that would be just the Schrödinger equation for. I mean, if q is exponential of it, then this is precisely q is exponential of I time, then this is precisely the Schrödinger. This is, you know, and drop the q-dependent terms here, and this would be the Schrödinger equation for Clausura. Yes. What we're supposed to solve in the first place, and with this it becomes a non-stationary analog of that, and the solutions of that, other than anybody who studied quantum cohomology knows that this is a very important thing to study. But they're going back to the pictures that so the connection with Gromov-Witten, Dahlen, and Thomas theory. Solutions are related to the general one-partition triple Hodge integrals, and also they're related to the secant vertex with one of infinite lag. So this relation gives you some kind of formula for the solution. I mean, but it's not. This in principle is some kind of sum. So that's just to get a sense for how this looks like, how this equation looks like for n equals two, then you get that's a 2x2 equation, and it's a hypergeometric equation. For n equals three, it looks like this. That's the equation. It's a 3x3 equation with two parameters t1 and t2, and here's the equation. And since it's a linear ODE, you can just solve it on your computer term by term, and you'll see that something actually nice happens. And what nice happens is, well, first of all, the just as what I'm trying to say, just as the linear differential equation, it's a very nice equation. So first of all, it has only regular singularities at and zero, infinity, and roots of unity. The singularities of zero and infinity are due to the pole of this operator, and the roots of unity are the denominators in here. And the residues at zero and infinity, well, what it's supposed to do is plug q equals zero in here. And by plugging q equals zero or infinity, you see this is essentially symmetric with respect to q goes to 1/q. Both of them, both of these residues are the Clausura of Sutherland operators. And the residues at roots of units are just diagonal because all the q dependent terms were in diagonal. So of course we have a linear ODE. Then classical theorem. Classical by some classics in this audience. then this solubility is precisely controlled by the monodromy group. And if it's monodromy group, it's right. By the nice and peaceful group, or the holonomy group is nice and peaceful group. So, and the theorem about this monodromy. So the monodromy is something very special for this equation, and one thing you wouldn't expect to happen. It's something like this happens for a hypergeometric equation, but it's in general there's nothing like this for a general equation. That the monodromy of this equation is in fact invariant if I shift the variables by integers. With some, if I shift, say, particular variable by one, then there's some finite set of rational numbers that I need to avoid. But otherwise, it's invariant. And you see, this has a... this has a sort of amazing corollary, and amazing for me is that you see this operator. All the non-stationary terms here are multiplied by the sum of variables. So if the sum of variables is an integer, then by shifting this integer, we can make it zero. And then we're down to constant coefficient case, and there's no monitor on it. So you see, if this number turns out to be an integer, then miraculously then there's no monitor on the around the roots of unity. Of course, the monodrome is unipotent, but in principle, there's no way to rule out some kind of Jordan block. So this is somewhat unexpected, I must say. And certainly it was unexpected for me. So the corollary is that when this number, which we call level, because we anticipate some connection to some sort of representations here, although that's somehow so far behind. I mean, at the moment is behind. There are many representation theoretic ways to understand the Clojure operator, but this particular non-stationary Clojure operator hasn't been identified with any natural representation theoretic construction, but just how provisional we call this level. When this guy is an integer, there is no monitor on roots of unity. And if there's no monitor on roots of unity, all you're left with is the monitor, the abelian monitor around zero and infinity. And so therefore, you can write with this, in fact, when it's a positive integer, you can write it as solutions of the form power of q, which is just responsible for the eigenvalues of the Clojure operator times, in fact, a polynomial in q. So the solution will have the form this q to this eigenvalue. The eigenvalue is sum of t1, sum of, I don't know, maybe we'll skip over that. This is the most natural function. This is the most natural function of the partition you can form given two numbers.
Is there a mystery?
Yeah, one is I, the other is J. Yeah, sorry. Right. Look. You should be the editor of every journal. This is the Jack polynomial generalization of the quadratic Casimir. If T1 is minus T2, then that's a quadratic Casimir. Otherwise, it's some very natural generalization. So anyway, that's the eigenvalue of the Clojure, and then times polynomial. And the polynomial starts, of course, with the residue at zero is the Clojure operator. This polynomial we may normalize it to start with just the eigenfunction plus higher terms in Q, and the degree of that polynomial is this. And if you take this expression and where prime is transpose partition, and this expression is some positive integer times K, then this level kappa, and so with this level kappa as an integer, that makes sense. That's a positive integer. The degree of the polynomial grows linearly with the level kappa, and it has some. This polynomial has some quite a few nice properties. Somehow there are some very quick ones that's the symmetry. Can you catch another misprint? Well, there should be transpose partition here, because if you exchange the variables, you transpose the partition, and they also the Jack polynomials, they're orthogonal. These guys are bi-orthogonal if you take this the one corresponding with the variables T1 and T2, and then you flip the signs of T1 and T2, you get the bi-orthogonal family. With respect to this natural inner product on symmetric function, and So this factor, the norm square of Jack polynomials, is something very standard, and you know, I won't review it here. It's given in some. I will give you the flavor of what it looks like in a second. It's some kind of hook-length product, and so there's somehow more interesting question here. You can look for scattering. You see, so depending on how you view this, whether your time is imaginary or real, so to speak, you can view this non-stationary perturbation as either periodic in time, or you can consider the, in which case, or you can consider the, so to speak, you know, make your time flow along the real axis. So Q is complex, right? I mean, you can do, you know, this exponential, you can make either periodic in time, or you can make them, you know, decaying in time, in which case you get the scattering situation. Meaning, what I mean is that I can start to take the solution at Q equals zero and analytically continue it to Q equals infinity. That means since Q is the exponential of time, that means I consider the transformation from times minus infinity to time plus infinity. And so if I start with at both ends, it becomes the Clojure. We're used to the situation when scattering is between 3 and 3 and something in the middle. But here would be the situation, so we have, you know, Clojure at one end, Clojure at the other end, and we can ask what's the transformation between the two. And so, like I said, you know, what this somehow means in terms of equation is start the solution at Q equals zero, analytically continue at Q equals infinity, and expand it in terms of, and in fact, not only you, so, and that is done by the fact that there's the following connection of Q goes to 1 over Q, and what it does, it essentially, up to some normalization factors, it just flips the diagram. You take a precision, and it flips the diagram. It's sort of like in free systems, you get exchange of the momenta reorder. And if you have like a total scattering, the incoming and outgoing momenta just reordering one another. And so up to some the standard involution on symmetric functions and this normalization factors, that was going on. And the factors I'll write for you explicitly because I think they're kind of cute. And this is like this. So this is this you've seen this hook length things before. So if I have a partition and I have a square in that partition, then there is an arm and the leg of a square. So this is means arm is the this length and leg is this length. And if you form the product over all boxes in lambda of this ratio of gamma functions, then you get something. And for when kappa is a positive integer, this in fact is this ratio. I mean the difference between the argument here and there is an integer, so it's in fact a polynomial. And this polynomial is has degree k plus 1. So there's this k plus 1, I mean kappa plus 1 factors per square, which is, I don't know, if you work with Jack polynomials, kind of cute because typically you get the typical formulas for Jack polynomials involve 1 or 2 factors per square. And here somehow, here you get a. So anyway, that's just to indicate that this, there's something nice going on. And so how about formula for this, guys? Well, I don't think this is somehow you can ask for formula in the base, in the, so to speak, in the Nakajima or power sum basis. You can't really ask because even at Q equals zero, you get the Jack polynomials, and nobody knows how to expand it in terms of power sum functions. That would be the sort of Jack general. So if you take Schur function, which is a particular case of Jack polynomials, then the expansion of the Schur function in terms of power sum function are the characters of the symmetric group. And these are, you know, it depends on point of view whether these have been understood or not, but they're, so to speak, This, so to speak, object we learn to live with, but the Czech polynomials analog of that have not been understood at all, and in fact somehow. Well, it's a historical fact that Henry Jackson himself spent a large chunk of his life trying to find this formula, to which McDonald's comment was that he was barking up the wrong tree. So I don't know. I mean, maybe it's not such a great undertaking to write the formula for this more general polynomials in this particular base. Maybe some other bases you can write. I mean, we sort of expect nice formulas of various kinds for this polynomials, but not in this particular basis. However, what there's a certain magic happens. Remember that Q equals 0 and Q equals 1 are very special points from the point of view of this Groen-Witten-Donaldson-Thomas correspondence. And at Q equals minus 1, there's some magic happens. The coefficients are nice. Some nice factorizations happen there. Now I'm coming to the concluding slide of my talk, and that is so. I think by giving you some, well, because that's the Groen-Witten point, Q equals minus one. Right, but I mean, that's still the same Q. No, that's the same Q, right? It's the same. It is the same Q, yes.
Really?
Yeah, it's the same Q. It's the same Q. Yeah, it has to. Right, right. But it needs to think about it. And that has the.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. If you ask, suppose I have a a curve. Suppose I have a curve in the Hilbert scheme, and I view the, and I sort of speak, and suppose it's a nice curve, so I can consider the corresponding ideal in the. Would you like me to answer your question now or later? So the computation you make. So if I have a curve in the Hilbert scheme, and it's a nice curve in the sense that you have a corresponding ideal in the threefold, and you ask what's the order characteristic of that? Well, it's pretty much that. I mean, it's the same key. So like I said, I firmly believe that there is a rich theory of this more general polynomial that apparently is not reducible to anything to any other theory I know, and maybe it's one of those future examples in to be developed theory of non-stationary integrable system. As far as I know, there's not the theory non-existent, there are examples. There are other examples of which I can list as possible candidates for to appear in here, and we expect more of those. And they were, just from studying the for further study of Groen-Witten-Donaldson-Thomas theories for threefolds, I certainly expect more. So. You can ask a very simple question like take instead replace your C2 by an arbitrary smooth surface, then something's supposed to happen, and I'm sure whatever happens will be nice. Okay, that's